This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. Judges, law enforcement, state and federal lawmakers, city council members, community organizers, they're coming together to do something about domestic violence. There is now a commission on collaborative strategies to prevent, combat, and respond to domestic violence. There are gaps in the system that are allowing this epidemic of violence to continue. They need to be identified and solved, and to do this, we've got to hear the stories of when things went wrong. When you asked for and didn't get help because of a domestic violence situation with your family or someone that you know, we need to hear about that. The community has to have a voice in this process, or we're just not going to come up with the solutions that are going to work. So call us and tell us what needs to be fixed. With your questions and comments, the number is 210-614-8980. Email us at thesource@tpr.org. You don't have to give your real name. To tell us the real story, tell us the real deal. The number is 210-614-8980. You can also tweet at us at @tprsource. We're joined this hour by Judge Peter Sakai of the 225th District Court and the Children's Court. He's also a founder of the Commission on Collaborative Strategies to Prevent, Combat, and Respond to Domestic Violence. Judge Monique Diaz of the 150th Civil District Court, also co-chair of the commission, and Dr. Colleen Bridger, assistant city manager and co-chair of the commission as well. So we're fortunate to have you guys. All right, so Judge Peter Sakai, can you tell us what you see, particularly from the view of the Children's Court? How is it that we have, what is the presentation of domestic violence?
Well, obviously we have a big problem in this community. I would say it's at epidemic proportions, especially when we hear from the victims and we hear the stories about what perpetrators do in regards to domestic family violence. All you have to do is watch the news every night to see a victim of family violence. Since I've been in the courthouse for nearly 25, 30 years now, and dealing pretty much with child abuse and neglect, there's a direct correlation between the domestic and family violence and child abuse and neglect. And so I've been focused very heavily on the children's side of things, and it's basically gotten to a point to where we really can't really get into the solutions of abuse and neglect unless we deal with one of the fundamental issues, and that's we've got to deal with family and domestic violence. So basically, with leadership, with Dr. Colleen Bridger for the city, with Judge Monique Diaz as a district court judge, I, as a local administrator judge, decided to put a collaborative commission. And I think that's what's unique about this commission. It is a collaboration of all the stakeholders who are involved in the issues of domestic and family violence. We have law enforcement, we have the judiciary, we have the public health community, we have the medical community, we have the mental health, we have all the people that make up the system that victims and perpetrators filter through. And so what we want to do is identify the gaps and identify where the weaknesses are, the flaws in our system are. Because what we've heard, especially from those town hall meetings that Congressman Doggett, Congressman Joaquin Castro held, it's obviously the victims feel that they don't get the dignity and respect, that their voices aren't heard. And so I, as local administrative judge, decided to issue an order and put all these stakeholders. It's not to diminish the hard work that everybody's doing. It's just how can we do it better? And where are the gaps? And let's fix these flaws in our system.
And Judge Monique Diaz, can you talk about being co-chair of the commission? Where do you see can be helped? What can be done?
Oh, I think there's a lot of opportunity in this commission. I'm very optimistic for us making real progress in the short term and in the long term. This commission, as Judge Sakai stated, is comprised of all of these stakeholders in our community, each of which know that individually there are things that we could be doing better. Collectively, there are things that we could be doing even greater. So my hope is that this commission is going to open lines of communication, is going to allow us as all of these stakeholders to discuss what are we each doing? What kinds of services are we providing? What could we provide? How could we provide services better for our community? One of the things that I have great hope on, as you are well aware, there are certain state and federal laws already on the books that prohibit certain individuals from possessing firearms for certain periods of time. Some of those individuals are individuals that are convicted of domestic violence, those that are the subject of protective orders or mental health orders. And one of the things that we've seen that we could do better locally is ensure that those firearms are removed from the possession of people who are already court-ordered to not possess them, especially in instances of domestic violence. And so the Judiciary Committee will be taking that issue head-on, working with our heads of law enforcement, working with our DA, to put processes in place that will ensure that once there's a court order stating you can no longer possess a firearm, that we have follow-up steps to take to ensure that we're removing those from individuals. So that's one of the things that I'm optimistic about us working on.
Colleen Bridger, Assistant City Manager, what does it mean that the city and the county, all these different agencies are coming together to tackle this problem?
Well, I think this is the perfect opportunity for us to do so. In May, City Council asked us to put together a comprehensive plan for how we were going to address domestic violence. And we're fortunate to be able to use that plan as a menu of options. We've identified many of the gaps and many of the evidence-based interventions that are available to us. And so working with the commission, we're able to merge those two efforts together. So they can use the plan as a menu of items from which to choose, and we can use the commission as a way to really make sure that everybody who has a stake in this is actually working together.
So Judge Diaz, when it gets to the court, is it already too late? I mean, should there have already been interventions before it ends up in your courtroom?
It's never too late to address the issue.
But which
yes,
could have been happened earlier.
Yes, there is a lot that could have been done earlier, and that is part of what the commission aims to tackle, is how can we better intervene at all of those points that we have opportunities to intervene. That's at the healthcare level when people are showing up to emergency rooms, showing up to their doctors. That is from the moment that law enforcement shows up to an incident of domestic violence. That's going even further back, and Dr. Bridger can talk more about this, but really focusing on prevention also and educating children to make sure that they understand healthy relationships and the importance of not, you know, becoming a victim or an abuser. So from prevention all the way to when they get to our courts, there are moments of intervention that we could be addressing better, and that's part of what this commission will address.
So that's going to take data, getting better record keeping, asking law enforcement to fill out, you know, I guess keep track of things? Is that the idea?
Absolutely. One of the things, so there's five committees within the commission that are each addressing different areas, and then the commission as a whole will be addressing things like how can we improve our data collection across the board so we can have a better understanding of the issue in our community and how to better address it.
So we really want to get a better understanding of what's behind domestic violence, what happens when people who are confronted by a violent intimate partner, what goes wrong when they have asked for help in the past. Building public trust is a big part of that, this process, so that people know that they can get the help that they need. So we really want to hear from the community today. If you can call in and tell us your stories, you don't have to give us your real name, so that we can identify, you know, what went off the rails here, where was the handoff, where was it dropped, what can we get right next time? The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. The source continues after this break. Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about the Domestic Violence Collaborative. With me in the studio, Judge Peter Sakai, Judge Monique Diaz, and Colleen Bridger, Assistant City Manager. And our phone line is 210-614-8980. These are the folks who are going to try to figure out what can be done, how can the system be adjusted in order to be better to deal with the outbreak, the epidemic of domestic violence that we have here in Bexar County. But this is also a national problem, and we have to wrap our heads around that as well. 210-614-8980. Let's go straight to the phones with Robert. And Robert, welcome to The Source, sir. You're on the air.
Yes. I had an issue with my daughter had a boyfriend, and she was physically being abused by him. And we found out that he was on probation for the same thing, but we're doing that to his ex-girlfriend. It took my daughter some time to finally leave this guy and to decide that she wanted to press charges on him. When we took her to go press charges, it was like 2 months later, and they said there was nothing we can do about it because she waited too long. When we tried to press charges on him before that, they wouldn't allow us because she was the one that had to decide and go do it. So now she feels that the system let her down because this guy is still on probation, and he is still, you know, he was abusing my daughter. And I don't understand how he can get away with, you know, doing that to other people.
All right, Robert, thank you for the call. So there's a situation there, the red flags were there. A person who was being domestically abused by a male intimate partner, they turned to law enforcement for help, and they didn't get the help they wanted. Judge Peter Sakai.
Well, that's an example of where perhaps the system's not talking to each other. My first question is, you know, what response is law enforcement giving this particular family? Is the person that they're talking to giving them correct information, or is it being people are not getting the straight information so that they're going around in circles, so to speak? And then my next question is, where's the probation department? Why haven't they intervened? Why isn't that information going back to the judge who is actually supervising? So there's all these stakeholders that are involved, and we have a perpetrator out there who's been adjudicated. His gun should be taken away, and he should be under strict supervision of probation. He shouldn't be committing domestic and family violence while on probation. So again, that's a gap, a flaw, and we're going to have to get all our stakeholders in the room, and we're going to have to discuss this, and we're going to find out why the system's not talking to each other so that we can assist families such as this caller.
And so Judge Monique Diaz, I guess you can understand why an individual, a woman in that situation, took the big risk finally to go forward to law enforcement and didn't get the help that they needed. And it is a huge risk because you're dealing with a volatile individual who is going to resort to violence when he finds out what happened, right? So how do we keep that door open? Because next time, they're not going to be as willing to speak up.
You're absolutely right. Every moment along the way that someone is met, with an issue like this caller's daughter was, it's discouraging, and it has a ripple effect across our community. So one of the things that we want to work on as this commission, I'm hoping that we do work on, is a communications campaign that helps inform our public as to what those options were, to clear the air. Where can you go? What can you do? What are the measures that can be taken? How do you put a safety plan in place? We have the Family Violence Prevention Services right now, our Battered Women and Children's Shelter, that's providing a lot of services to these individuals. But that can't be the only place that everyone goes. They don't have the bandwidth for that. So that's one of the things we want to work on, is better informing our public about what their options are, what their legal options are, and where they can go get help. So I'm hoping that we will work on these issues.
If I have text messages from this guy who's threatening to beat me up or do all these horrible things to me, is that something I can bring into court, Judge Diaz?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I've seen that before. I've seen people come to court for protective orders based on harassing messages, harassing behavior. So absolutely, we encourage women to come forward with that because that's often a precursor to worse behavior. So please come forward with that. Please report it to the police if you're being harassed, if you're being stalked. Those are dangerous indicators that need to be brought to our attention.
All that social media is evidence.
Absolutely.
Okay, another caller. Let's go to Patty. Patty, hi. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Yes, sir. I just wanted to leave a comment that other states take over and press charges against the abuser, no matter what the beaten woman has to say. And so I'm disappointed that didn't happen here. I've had personal experience with it, and it was extremely difficult.
All right, Patty, thank you for that. So it's the state versus the individual. You know, the state has to file the charges, right? So Judge Peter Sakai, you know, what goes wrong?
Well, that's where we have to get our district attorney. And we've got a new district attorney, Joe Gonzalez, who's come in here. And I will tell you, he's totally committed to be part of this collaboration. I've asked him to look at his whole process from his Family Justice Center as to the prosecution and the prosecutors who deal and the family advocates that deal. We have to know where these points of entry are and who's talking to these families and to these victims and what information are they getting. And I'm hearing that there's a lot of confusion. I'm hearing that there's a lot of perhaps misinformation. And to some degree, perhaps nobody's ever sat down to talk to each other. So for the first time, we're trying to figure out, okay, where are the gaps and where are the flaws? And that's why this commission is so important and so powerful, because we're not pointing fingers at each other. We're just saying, how can we do it better and how can we protect these victims in a better way?
So we're not trying to fix the blame, but fix the problem. And we got an email from Maria. It says, SAPD officers often lack basic domestic violence training. Colleen Bridger, assistant city manager. I know that the police chief is saying that he is going to assign officers to this, and he's adjusting assignments. What's happening with SAPD?
They've been working on this issue for the last couple of years, and they've made really good progress in reorganizing the response and reorganizing the training that officers have received. But I think everybody recognizes that this is still a work in progress, and we really do want community input into how we can do a better job. In this year's budget, there are additional officers that will solely be working on domestic violence, and the chief is co-chairing the law enforcement committee of this commission. That's how seriously he's taking this. And so I think that he and the sheriff both are very interested in figuring out what additional changes and improvements they can continue to make.
And is it true, according to Maria, that these officers lack basic domestic violence training? They get that training.
They do get training. Yes, they do.
Dave, let me interject, because I hear the stories too, and I think sometimes we're asking PD to do so much nowadays. We want them to obviously do their job as law enforcement, protect us, keep us from the bad guys, go arrest criminals. But then we're asking them to be social workers. We're asking them to have contact with the victims, and perhaps it's not so much that they don't care or they don't want to or they don't have the training. It's just that basically it's a different mindset. And perhaps we need to get away from the fact that we impose this on police officers, and perhaps we need more victim advocates. We need that police officers need to shift it to the victim advocates we do have. And so it's just basically getting people to the right place so that they can navigate this complicated process, what we call the justice system.
But we have to look at points of contact between the justice system and the public. And it is going to be SAPD officers who are going to be that initial contact, particularly when things are erupting. Judge Diaz, how do you think the SAPD should be involved? You cannot arrest our way out of this particular problem, because there are a lot of upstream causes to this, and we'll talk about those. But in the immediate, urgent event, how does SAPD enter into this?
Well, SAPD and BCSO, as Dr. Bridger mentioned, we also have our sheriff is a co-chair of the Law Enforcement Commission working with the chief on this issue. But I think when law enforcement responds to scenes, there are things that can be done that they could be trained on if they aren't already that are maybe a little bit more nuanced. For example, what is the meaning of domestic violence? Which cases would you classify as a domestic violence case versus a simple assault? Classifying those properly is something that could be a tremendous help for us. That is something easy that I think the law enforcement can maybe start to do in the interim, so we can have better data and a better understanding, again, of what is the state of domestic violence in our community. That's one way. I agree with Judge Sakai, though, that we can only put so much on our officers' plates, but we have been making progress over the last few years. They have been going through trainings. I know Martha Pelias has gone out there personally and trained the officers as well. So I know that they're doing things and that they will continue to do things. But that's one example of a way that I think we could improve how they're doing their jobs.
Let's go to the phones with Evan. Evan, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you. Hello, Judge. I wanted to say, as a suggestion, that A lot of times victims don't go and do what they need to do, so I'm suggesting that officers already have enough to do that. As soon as they get a domestic call, they automatically call a social worker task force that's specific for domestic violence, and that they automatically put in for a expedited protective order, so that way we have this early prevention of further violence before it gets to the courtroom, and perhaps a mediation or medical services could be handled, counseling services could be handled to actually solve the cause of domestic violence to begin with, and it never has to be adjudicated as a crime.
Evan, thank you for that. Judge Peter Sakai?
That's what we need. We need the public to step up. We need more voices to say, hey, there are different ways to handle this. And, you know, he has made some suggestions that, I'll be honest with you, he's on point.
Okay, and Judge Diaz.
I agree with Judge Sakai, and I mean there is a lot that we can do. There are some states that handle this better, and that, you know, kind of walk through the life of a victim, the life of an abuser, and track that a little bit better as a predictor for future potential abuse. And so, I think that that he is correct. We could be doing a better job, and that's exactly what the point of the commission is.
But an individual who finds themselves in a relationship and it goes south, there's domestic violence, I call the police. Is that the first thing I ought to be doing? You know, if I find myself in a situation, is that the first call that I make, Judge?
If your life is in danger, you absolutely call the police first. And if it's not, you still call the police and report if you've been harassed, if you're being stalked, if those things could constitute crimes, which they can. You call the police, you create a report, and you start creating a record of that. You also, I strongly recommend reaching out to our Family Violence Prevention Services, which will walk you through creating a plan to leave the abusive home as well, and provide you additional services if needed. But absolutely, police is the first person to call if you're in danger.
And then Colleen Bridger, I contact the domestic violence, you guys, or who else do I talk to? I mean, how do I get out of this situation?
So the easiest thing for folks to remember is if they call 211, which is the United Way information hotline, United Way can help them figure out where they are in this process and what additional resources they need. So that would be the easiest thing. Somebody who isn't fearing for their safety, in which case you definitely need to call the police. But if you are thinking ahead and trying to figure out, well, what happens if this goes this way, 211 is a really good number to call, because they have access to all of the contact information for all of the different resources throughout the city that can help people, whether it's coming up with a safety plan, whether it's, you know, mental health services for the abuser. There are programs out there that can help people who don't know how to control their anger and it escalates to violence. There are treatment programs out there for individuals like that. So it's a wide variety of services depending on where you are, and 211 is a good place to start.
I need to go to this break, but I just want to mention that, you know, in this recent report about the status of women in Bexar County, we saw that women are most vulnerable with unemployment, low wages, housing, everything that is wrong in San Antonio is hitting single moms the worst, and people who are caught in these relationships, and they need certainty to know who to turn to and what's available to them. So when we come back from this break, we should talk about what are the certain available services that they can turn to get help. And the number to call in is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. The source continues when we come back.
Immigration.
I think we need to all get in before the wall goes up.
Health.
The Promotora, they have all the resources that can get them the help that they need.
Art.
There's this kind of subversiveness to it, right?
We cover all these topics and more on Fronteras as we examine issues along the border and beyond. I'm Norma Martinez. Download Fronteras where you find your favorite podcasts.
You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about the epidemic of domestic violence that we have here in Bexar County, but it's also a national problem. There's hostility against women somehow in the American culture, and it is showing up in emergency rooms and in police stations and in courtrooms. What is going on? How can we deal with that locally and also talk about what is going on here? There's something seriously wrong with our culture that this is happening. With us today, Judge Peter Sakai, Judge Monique Diaz, Colleen Bridger, Assistant City Manager, and the phone line is 210-614-8980. Let's go to Genevieve. Genevieve, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Yes. I'd like to see more investment on addressing men's issues. I believe it's just as much a men's health issue it is a women's issue. And I'd like to see places where men can go to before they start to abuse. Maybe a shelter where a man can go to seek counseling and calm down and seek whatever he needs medically, mentally, so he can go back home before he starts to abuse.
All right, Genevieve, thank you for that. So Colleen Bridger, Assistant City Manager, Co-Chair of the Commission on Domestic Violence. The commission's name is the Commission on Collaborative Strategies to Prevent, Combat, and Respond to Domestic Violence, giving men options, teaching them how to not become aggressive.
Yes, and there are evidence-based interventions out there so that we know work that can help men not resort to violence. The other thing that Genevieve said, though, that I found fascinating was a shelter for men to go to. So often, one of the biggest economic barriers to women being able to leave their abuser is there's no place for them to go but to go to a shelter. If we could flip that paradigm and have the men go to the shelter and receive the intensive counseling and help that they need while they're there and allow the women and the children to stay home, that's an excellent idea.
The children, okay. Typically, there are children involved in this situation. Judge Peter Sakai, you have the children's court, and the women are trying to protect the children as well. So we have to figure out how we can make them, give them the certainty that your children are not going to be worse off if they ask for help, right?
You're right, and you're identifying an issue that is ongoing, and in history there's been not so much conflict, but there has been disagreement with the domestic violence advocates and the child advocates, because from a child advocate, they're looking for the protection of children at all costs, including even if you're a victim of domestic violence, if you're putting your children in that situation, child advocates will tend to look at removing children, whereas domestic violent advocates look at the essence of domestic violence and say, hey, that's all part and parcel. So what Martha Palazzo at Family Violence Prevention Services has recognized is that we need to recognize the children, and the children need to be part of the equation. And the law does require this. We always look at the best interests of children. And so sometimes we have to hold, obviously, the perpetrator accountable for his acts or omissions, but we also have to look at the victim and make sure that he or she is empowered to protect the children. And that's why we need evidence-based outcome programs that are effective. And that's what we call our Batterers Intervention Prevention Programs, our BIT programs, that are created by statute and are required for these perpetrators to go through. Because one thing I've learned from the nonprofit providers is that if you're going to change action and behavior, you must change attitude and beliefs. So anger management type classes or classes that tell you to calm down and don't lose your temper, they're really not effective. What we have to do is change people's way of thinking. And you've hit it, Dave. There's this culture of violence, of domination, control, of power. And that's what essence of domestic violence is. And we've got to change that attitude, change those beliefs, and make sure that we provide wholesome environments for our children. And ultimately, that's the reason why I'm involved, because it then would help deal with the child abuse and neglect situation. And we would have a healthier community when we put these collaborations together.
Back to the phones with Jennifer. Jennifer, hi, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, good afternoon. Thank you for having me on. I am a resident of an apartment complex, and my ex-neighbor used to beat the ever-living crap out of his wife, and it was truly traumatic to hear. I called the police more times than I can count, and I don't remember a single time where they actually came. So in an apartment complex, you know, you might have as many as four or five neighbors that share walls with a situation like this that can that would hear these things going on and could possibly be in contact with the police. So my question is, what programs, what partnerships, what outreach programs might there be in place, or could there be put in place to work specifically with apartment complexes?
All right, Jennifer, thank you for the call. And what a horrific thing to have to endure in your own home. Hearing that, and then imagine being the person living with that. Colleen Bridger, Assistant City Manager.
So we have actually initiated a pilot program in the city of San Antonio to deal with multi-family housing units for this particular reason, because we do recognize that this is an issue in apartment complexes or places where you have high concentrations of families living close together. And what we're trying to do is bring all of the different resources together into this one pilot project to figure out if we can get in front of this, and can we help neighbors know what is the right thing to do, when is the right thing to do it, and how to make sure that there is an appropriate response. So we're piloting that right now in one area, but we want to learn the best way to do it so that we can expand that throughout the entire city.
Judge Monique Diaz, how accountable are the men who perpetrate domestic violence? Do they get brought into court? Do they get charged? Do they go to jail? You know, or do these men feel like they can be an abuser and get away with it?
Well, I would say statistically that the majority of men are held accountable ultimately, and I want women to know that the men can be held accountable and to not be afraid to call the police and to press those charges. But yes, we could be doing a better job. Since we're discussing men, we know that the issue impacts men and women. It disproportionately impacts women. I think it's 85% of the victims are women. But men are also impacted, kind of in the same vein as what we were talking about before. The overwhelming majority of men that are in our prisons have experienced or witnessed some form of domestic violence as children. And so, you know, kind of to Judge Sakai's and Dr. Bridger's issue, we also should be focusing on those children and making sure that they get the services that they need so that they don't end up becoming abusers. Yes, there is a level of accountability. Yes, we could be doing a better job. And that, again, requires us bringing all of these stakeholders to the table and talking about how individually we can be doing our jobs better and collectively.
We have all these homicides that are happening locally, and that's got to be the most urgent part of trying to figure this out. And I guess we try to identify what are the flags that this could happen in a household before we reach that. Are there signs that can be brought to bear, Judge Sakai?
Well, and that's the reason why we need an infrastructure. We need our nonprofit communities to educate. Ultimately, we need the schools involved. We need to bring the schools in. And my position with the schools is that we don't want to mandate to them what they have to do. I would ask them that they really need to figure out how they can plug in, so to speak, in regards to this culture of violence, because it's affecting them too when it comes to bullying. It comes to when it's to teenage dating violence that goes on in the high schools and middle schools. I mean, this issue starts at such an early age, and so the schools must be involved. We have to figure out how they can develop programs, classes, training, and what we need to do is basically let this community know that we're just not going to tolerate the culture of violence. We need to change these attitudes and beliefs. And that's the reason why this collaborative commission is so powerful, is because I believe we have the stakeholders that can move this community and make some paradigm shifts in the way we handle domestic and family violence.
So, but, you know, we've had these horrible homicides recently where men have murdered their wives, and were there things that could have happened to prevent that? And then why don't we do that? You know, what were those things that could have been done? I mean, that apartment complex where the guy is beating up his female's intimate partner, you know, why didn't police respond to that? You know, that could have been the next homicide. You know, where are we going wrong? How do we do that? You know, Judge Diaz, any ideas?
Some of the states that have shown success in decreasing their intimate partner violence rates have effectively utilized what's called a lethality assessment tool. And that is one of the things that we as a commission are looking at, trying to ensure is being utilized at each step of the way, each of those moments of intervention from the courts backwards. Some of the factors that you look at are whether there's been a history of domestic violence, whether the abuser has threatened your children before, whether you have children that are outside of the relationship, whether they have tried to strangle you before, whether they're unemployed or have drug or alcohol addiction issues. So there's a few questions and factors that are looked at and that rate an individual's, you know, likelihood of being killed, actually. And in other states where they've successfully decreased this intimate partner violence rate, they track those individuals and hold their hand along the way and try to ensure that they don't end up becoming one of those statistics. So that's one of the things that we'd like to do better.
All right, we're taking another break. We're talking about domestic violence, a collaborative here in San Antonio and Bexar County looking for ways to prevent, combat, and respond to domestic violence. We really want to hear from the community because many times y'all have come in contact with an abuser, asked for help, and you didn't get the help that you wanted or needed, or it just didn't work out. What happened? What can we do? How can we change the system to respond? The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. The source continues right after this. Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about domestic violence and the epidemic that we have here in Bexar County. There is a collaborative, a commission looking for ways to bring this under control, hold people account, make San Antonio, make Bexar County safer for women. The number is 210-614-8980. Jim is on the line. Jim, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thanks. I work for a local treatment center for the affordable, people who cannot otherwise afford it, and I'd like to know what percentage of the cases are substance and alcohol abuse related.
All right, Jim, thank you for that. Colleen Bridger, Assistant City Manager, co-chair of the commission, used to be head of the health department. What is the connection with addiction?
Well, there's a strong connection with addiction. The data we have right now doesn't really parse that out for us, but I don't think it would be shocking to anybody to learn that in the vast majority of these cases, substance use disorder plays a key role.
But what I would add is that although addiction in the domestic violence is a factor, I don't want to use that as the causation and say that domestic violence is because everybody's using drugs or gets drunk and they lose things. We know from the nonprofit community, or at least my education from them, is that this is all about attitudes and beliefs. And so obviously we have to deal with addiction and alcoholism and minimize those issues and faults. But I think it's we've got an epidemic here, and from a public health perspective, I just think we've got to figure out how we can change some thinking and have some effective programs.
Email from Renee: could there be a database of abusers like we have for sex offenders? So if someone breaks the law, they get convicted. Why not you know, make put them on a registry of some sort. Judge Diaz, what would that look like?
Well, I think that's a great suggestion. Logistically, it requires all of us working together to make sure that the accurate data is being placed in such a registry. I know that San Antonio became the second city in Texas, I think second to Dallas, to start reporting to DPS the names and fingerprints of those convicted of domestic violence so that they could be searchable through a state or federal criminal background search. That was something that was previously not searchable.
Right. You're not supposed to be able to own a firearm if you've been convicted of domestic violence. Isn't that right?
The laws vary between federal and state laws, but yes, there are time limitations upon how long you can possess a firearm. A court can order in certain circumstances. One is being convicted of domestic violence. Another is if you are the subject of a protective order, not the person seeking it, but the subject of it, or you're subject of a mental health order saying that you cannot possess firearms. And so, yes, there are already laws on the books that should help with that specific issue that we're not necessarily doing the best job of enforcing, but we do plan to work on that issue as a commission.
That was the issue with the Sutherland Springs shooter. He had been adjudicated as a domestic violence and should never have had access to weaponry, and he did.
Right.
So that's a fault of the system.
And I think something like 50% of mass shootings in the United States have a precursor or a direct tie to domestic violence for that specific incident. So it's a very serious issue we need to address. I think 2/3 of intimate partner homicides are committed with firearms as well. So I'm looking forward to us addressing that issue.
But that's if you're buying a gun through a federal licensed dealer. I can still buy a gun through a person-to-person, like the gun show loophole, and still obtain a gun. So the Sutherland Springs shooter is Devin Patrick Kelly. He was convicted through the military of domestic violence. They never entered him into the NICS system, and so he was able to actually buy a gun through a federal dealer at that point. Things that can be shorn up, you know, holes that have to be plugged up. I'm going to go to another caller. Let's go to Martha. Hi, Martha. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Well, I'm calling about a different kind of domestic abuse. I have a son who is 45 years old and has autism and intellectual disability and mental health issues. And when he has these horrible tantrums, we call the police and they take him down to an MH facility, mental health facility, and they won't take him because he's IDD, and that costs us $1,000 every time he has a tantrum. So what do families with mental health and IDD and autism issues, what can they do? There's no program for them.
Martha, thank you for that call. Let's go to Judge Peter Sakai.
Well, she's touching on a whole other issue, and that's the access for mental health and families and people who need treatment and need intervention. And basically, I'm proud to say that part of our collaborative commission is we've included our probate judges, Judge Veronica Vasquez and Judge Oscar Kazin. They are part of our collaborative commission because we see that their mental health system is very part and parcel of how we can intervene into these families and individuals who have domestic and family violence. So I certainly sympathize with this caller in regards to it, but obviously this state doesn't invest enough into the resources in order to protect her son and to provide a better place for her son and to provide better treatment. And so those are all issues. And then ultimately the long-term goals of this commission is to put down some long-term goals, which we would look at is perhaps recommending some statutory recommendations, some resource issues so that either the federal government, state government, or local government can collaborate to come up with a better system and properly resource it. And that has always been an issue, especially on the child abuse and neglect side.
All right. And so how important, how urgent does it feel like this is at the courthouse? You know, so Judge Monique Diaz, does it feel like there's a lot of energy here. Y'all are determined. You will find ways to, how the system can be changed. You will craft laws, take it to the lawmakers. Maybe do we need a special session? What needs to happen?
Well, the energy is palpable. We have incredible momentum, and I have felt it since really we have a whole new batch of elected officials that are in office right now that got elected in November and have, you know, taken the bench or other positions. And from the very beginning, there's been a great energy around this issue specifically. We've been talking about this. My colleagues have been working on it. You're probably familiar with Judge Rosie Speedlin Gonzalez has been making some strides on these efforts as well. So yes, the energy is palpable. We are ready to do something about it. We are tired of the system as is. We're tired of hearing from people telling us that the system is broken and for no one, for it to not be properly being fixed. So we are looking forward to working together, and people are taking the time out of their very busy schedules to focus all of their energy and attention on this issue, and I have faith that we will make great strides.
Got a question on Twitter. Can someone intervene in a domestic violence situation when there are no police around? You know, can you be a good Samaritan? What are your liabilities if you do something like that? You know, what should you do? I mean, do you document? Do you videotape with your phone? Do you reach out? How do you get involved?
The analogy I've used is in child abuse and neglect is to go to that person who is in need, who's in trouble, who's in distress, and to offer help. Offer help in the sense of just, what can I do for you? Is there anything I can do? A lot of times I've heard the stories where people will see children in distress in the public at a store and a parent who's unable and who's losing it and is ready to strike out at a little child. And just the act of kindness, act of caring, an act of getting involved and talk to someone who's in need. And unfortunately, we live in a very tough society. We live in a very hardened society. And so I think any acts of kindness and any acts of to intervene and help we shouldn't diminish those acts of kindness.
But do we have like a number that you could give somebody, a phone number? This is the number you need to call. This will help you, because we have numbers for child abuse. We have numbers for people we think are being trafficked, all sorts of agencies like that. So Colleen Bridger, is that what's needed?
We need a coordinated point of entry for people to be able to access a comprehensive slate of services. Right now, what we can offer people is the opportunity to call 211. So if it's not a life safety issue where they would call 911, then the number to hand people is 211. Now, we're still working through a lot of access issues and coordination issues. So it's not perfect, but at least that is one thing that people can do.
And is there some sort of flow chart that we can provide people who are in trouble and say, call this number. If this has happened to you, do this. If this is your problem, go here. All this information, it seems there's so much uncertainty for the victim that they need to know where to turn, Dr. Judge.
That's why we got this collaborative commission. We're going to outline it. We're going to put it on paper. We're going to figure out, okay, who is going to take responsibility and who's going to follow through and who's going to be accountable in this new paradigm shift of how do we deal with victims and families. And I just want to say a shout out to the city of San Antonio, because they have the leadership over there with city council and the city manager and Dr. Bridger here has been phenomenal. They have stepped up. They're doing the homework, so to speak, with the data. And obviously, Dr. Bridger's background is public health. So we're going to come up with solutions. And today we've really touched on that. And it's been a very enlightening session.
And so Judge Monique Diaz, report we filed for the City Council and for the County Commissioners really quickly, that is going to be contained some of where y'all want to go with this, right?
Correct. In October, we'll have a report for the Commission and City Council with strategies about what we intend to focus on.
All right, Judge Monique Diaz, Judge Peter Sakai, Colleen Bridger, Assistant City Manager, thank you so much. We'll be talking more about this. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Thanks for tuning us in. Thank you.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted by David Martin Davies, produced by Kim Johnson and Dallas Williams, with production assistance provided by me, Ruben Garcia, and Jan Ross Piedad. Dan Katz is TPR's news director.